Hi, everyone. This is Vincent from the future. You're about to listen to this first episode of this special series on crystal meth and PNP. And I just wanted to acknowledge that for this first episode, Jordan's microphone is not great. So the quality of the sound is not what I would prefer. But we have fixed this for the second episode. So I'm sorry about that. And hopefully from the second episode, it's going to be better. I hope you enjoyed this mini series, and you can start listening in 3, 2, 1 now. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Welcome back to Mental Health Much. I hope you missed me after that very long break of a few months. Today is not the start of season two. Season two, I'm hoping to start in the new year, but today is the start of this special project that I wanted to do. It's a 6-episode project on one topic with one guest. I wanted to do this project from the moment that I started my podcast. I'm going to have a little bit more time to explain why this is so important to me, but it's a big part of my work talking about addiction and crystal meth use amongst gay, bi, and queer men. And I felt like just one episode on this topic would not be enough. And I decided to do the whole show with just one person, Jordan, who's here with me right now, who I'll introduce in a second, because I wanted us to be able to push the conversation further. At first, I thought, oh, I'll have a different guest each week to talk about crystal meth. And I was a little bit afraid that everybody would talk about the same thing. So instead, I asked Jordan, and I'm really happy they said yes. And now we're recording this, and I hope it's going to be very informative for everyone. So without further ado, hi, Jordan.
Hi, Vincent. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very happy that we're starting this project.
I am too, and I'm glad when you think crystal meth, you think Jordan. So.
Jordan, we've worked together. We are both in Toronto. We do not work at the same agency anymore, but you did some projects with where I work, and you know, you're making jokes, but in Toronto, when people think about crystal meth and gay men's health, our names are may not be the first two at the top of the list, but I think we're both making top five.
Definitely top five. Definitely top five. I'm waiting for my crown, basically. Well, thank you for that. We're both doing interesting work around crystal meth. We're both coming at it from a very different angle, but like both with, I think, a lot of care and concern for our community at the heart of it. So
yeah, absolutely. We'll have a little bit more time to explain that. But the reason also I picked you is that I didn't want to pick someone that does exactly the same work as I do, in that I wanted to pick someone that I know is highly intelligent and has amazing things to say about this, but will not come at it exactly with the same angle as me. So picking you was a no-brainer.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Nobody's ever called me highly intelligent before.
Get used to it. So, Jordan, this is the first episode of 6, and today is obviously going to be more of a crystal meth 101 because we needed to start somewhere, and that just feels like the place we want to start. But I'm actually really excited that we're going to be able to take the conversations much further in the next few episodes. People now have heard me talk for a full season, so they know who I am, but tell us a little bit more about who you are, not that we're going to spend 6 special episodes just with you.
Where do I begin? My full name is Jordan Bond-Gore. I work at the Gay Men's Sexual Health Alliance, which is kind of how I know Vincent, is through my work there. I am a Toronto resident, but I was born and raised in Kingston, Ontario. I'm 41 years young. That sounds so awkward coming out of my mouth. and I am somebody who uses crystal meth. Yeah, that's kind of who I am. I mean, I just think that interesting about me, but I'm very attractive. You can't see it on the air, but I'm very attractive. If you're single in our audience, just call in, you know.
I will send out a special email just for people who want to flirt with you. So that's a good first question to ask. Like, we are talking, we're going to talk for 6, not just one episode, but 6 episodes. So the first question to ask is, who are we to talk about this? So I'll let you start and explain, like, what makes you a good person to talk about crystal meth? You already disclosed that you were a crystal meth user.
Yes. So first and foremost, I think that lived experience qualifies me to speak to some aspect of the experience with crystal meth. I'm certainly not the voice of a community of users because it's a very diverse community.
You mean you do not speak on behalf of every single person that uses Crystal Met in Canada?
I do not. I'm sorry. They did not give me that title. Queen of Crystal Meth is not as appealing as it sounds. So, but yeah, I think that that lived experience qualifies me. But as well as I think one of the things that makes me qualified to speak about it is that I bring a bit of an academic lens to it as well. I'm very interested in not only my life and like the experiences I have, but in the experiences of those around me and like thinking critically about, you know, my drug use and others' drug use and how it plays out. Like I've seen a lot of, you know, a lot of rough stuff. I've been through a lot of rough stuff in the community, but I also think that so much of the harm around drug use comes from the structures that we build around it, the stigma in our society. I think that critical thinking ability makes me qualified to talk about it to a degree. And I'm just loud. I'm really loud and I talk about it a lot because I'm really angry a lot of the time. So I'm like, let's make space to talk about it. So that's kind of what qualifies me. I hope that captures that for folks, but.
Yeah, you're actually doing like great work that has not been done a lot in the community. And this is where I come from. So I am a psychotherapist and I've worked in addiction therapy. So I've worked a lot more on the side of people who want to stop. Like I've worked in harm reduction as well, but like right now I work mostly in abstinence. This is just the nature of the job that I have right now. Mm-hmm. And it, because this is my job, this is the nature of people that come talk to me. People who come talk to me for my services, they want to stop. So it's very like putting a tinted glass over the way that I see and talk about Crystal Met, because my whole experience with it is mostly as a counselor for people who want to stop. And you were one of the person that quite a few years ago sort of like slowed me down. And I was like, abstinence is great. You're really helping those people who want to stop. But there's also work that can be done for people who are still using. And, you know, sometimes the expression, like you're so close to the forest, to the trees that you don't see the forest. I think I was there before your intervention. I think that was like 4 or something years ago. I was like so close to my work that I was like, oh, actually, Jordan's right. I need to like take a step back and really look at everything else and not just at that little portion of work that I've been doing. So that was quite important for me.
Oh, well, thank you. It's nice to hear that. I mean, I remember that interaction and just, you know, it was a conversation we had. You know, it's very easy, I think, sometimes in the work that we do to get blinded. I get that way too, right? For a long time, I was very focused on harm reduction. And this is a little preview of an episode later down the road. I saw abstinence as sometimes my enemy, right? Like it's sometimes a thing that I couldn't support because I saw such a great need amongst guys who are using crystal meth for harm reduction that I forgot that abstinence is just one aspect of a harm reduction spectrum that's so important. You know, my work comes out of a place of like seeing a real lack in our community. Gay men who did not know how to use crystal meth safely, who did not have services or supports that saw them where they were at, and who I think often felt very judged or criticized for their use and weren't getting any support where they were. And I don't think anybody can make a change if they don't feel validated where they are here today. Right? Mm-hmm. Like if I don't feel accepted and supported as is, how can I believe that I can make a change in the future? It was a bit of like my annoyance with that and my own experience of that that made me sort of come and maybe have that conversation with you in a friendly way and then sort of push to sort of create some space for guys who partied. And I continue to do that because I believe that everybody deserves to be met where they're at with love and compassion and with meaningful support, right? Versus what we think that they should be doing.
Yeah. And I think my work has proved to me too that people get better and heal and make progress in their life even without stopping their use. And sometimes it's so easy when somebody who, especially with all the stereotypes, and we're going to talk about the stereotypes a little bit later today, but mm-hmm. when people come in and, you know, they like they're disorganized in various ways in their life and they're unhappy with various ways in their life and they are using crystal meth like frequently, it's so easy to just think, well, obviously the solution for you is to stop using the drug. Would that help? Probably. Like, but it, does that mean that there's not a bunch of other things that can be done? Not at all. I wanted to ask the question, like, why is it important for us to talk about this? And why is it so important for me that I'm making 6 episodes on this? This is quite different from what I'm doing regularly in my podcast. But it's my podcast, so I can do whatever I want.
The truth comes out.
Also, like this format is something that I want to continue in the future. maybe like in between regular seasons, I want to do like small seasons all on one topic, because I think some of the topics are more than a 1 hour talk. So I wanted to talk about this because stigma, because stereotypes, because there's so much misinformation about what crystal meth is and what it's not in our communities. And we're going to really focus these episodes on like gay, bi, queer, cis, and trans men. It's going to be less queer and it's going to be more gay, so to speak, for these six episodes. But I've seen it. It's almost sometimes like the gay community is divided in half of like people who use crystal meth and then people who hate and have judgment about crystal meth. And they sort of like never meet in the middle. I think these episodes are going to be important for people on both sides of this spectrum. People are like, I don't know what crystal meth is, but I know it's bad because I've seen my friend, blah, 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 you know, lose their life to it. That's kind of like a stereotype again. But these stories are there in the community a lot. And then there are people who are using who feel like they cannot talk about it anywhere because they're just faced with a wall of stereotypes and prejudice. So I wanted us to come together that we are on both sides, technically, of this spectrum and prove to people that we can actually talk about this and that healing our community does not always go through abstinence, but it always go through good information, less stigma, less stereotypes, more understanding and more communication.
That was well said, actually. Like, you took the words out of my mouth, so I don't have to share anything now. Thank you for stealing my thunder. And if people came here expecting us to brawl or duke it out, that's not happening. There will be no catfights versus like abstinence versus harm reduction. I agree with you, Vincent, about the stigma piece and how important it is to talk about that. I think silence around the issue because of stigma, it really harms a lot of people. And it keeps people who even have like stable and you know, recreational use from talking about it. And when things get rough for folks, and this has certainly been my experience of it, you still can't talk about it because you're still so afraid of that judgment. And I mean, stigma, if people don't know what stigma is, I mean, it's that sort of judgment about a group of people based on a stereotype. It's fueled by so many things. And like we were talking in the preamble to this show about these sort of campaigns that come out to put fear into people about not using crystal meth, that like show people like, you know, teeth and all this stuff. It's stuff like that that fuels stigma and misinformation about crystal meth users. We paint them all with one brush, you know, within the gay community. Like, how many times have I been called a tweaker or no meth heads I see on people's profiles? And you feel that sting of like rejection. And it's really, really palpable in our community. You're quite right. There's a big line in the sand. You don't cross. You stick with the people who party if you party because you know other guys are going to have nasty things to say about you. It's really hurtful coming from your own community. I think there's reasons for it. I know that there's a lot of like damage that can come from more problematic crystal meth use that is visible. It does kill people. It does harm people in a great way, but not everyone, right? It's not the same story for everyone. Unfortunately, it's the story that's put out there by media, by government, right? By the policies that shape by criminality around drug use. It's a whole bunch of things that feed into that. And if unless you can have an honest, open conversation about it, people are always going to continue to encounter harms from any drug use, but from crystal meth. It has to be an open conversation where we just don't buy into the preconceptions and we see the other person across the table from us as a human being and not as some sort of creature. You know, we need to stop vilifying each other. And I think for guys who party too, we need to be willing to take the courageous step. And some of us who can, who have the privilege to come out, talk about it openly and demystify the conversation, because it's something's got to change. Something has to change.
Yeah. And you're right. It kills people and it destroys life. And so we need to talk about it. But if somebody is in front of me and is using, just telling them, oh, it's going to kill you, it's going to destroy your life, is not helpful in any way, shape, or form.
Nope.
One of the critique that I receive sometimes online or social media, because I talk about crystal meth a lot, is that it's almost like because I'm not constantly pushing the abstinence aspect, people are saying like, oh, you're promoting use. You're like promoting for people to use crystal meth. And I'm like, no, people are using crystal meth. And we have to acknowledge it if we want to help them. And it's that weird dual message that because I've worked in the HIV sector since I was like a baby counselor, like a young counselor, it's that dual message that a lot of people have a hard time understanding. We do that. We have that with HIV where on one hand, I will absolutely say that the life of people living with HIV is really important and there should be no stigma and no stereotypes, and that it's not like a disease that's going to kill you and it's not the end of the world to be HIV positive. But also at the same time, I will say with the same amount of truth in my voice, if you can avoid contracting HIV, please do. Mm-hmm. Like, just because there should not be stigma around HIV and it's not a death sentence anymore and, you know, people live with HIV and that's fine, does not mean like, oh, everybody should go out tonight and contract HIV. Like, but it's no. People have this very like hard time having those two messages living. And it's the same thing with crystal meth. Just because I say people who use crystal meth are humans and they deserve human rights. And some of them don't want to stop, can't stop, have not envisioned stopping or reducing. Some people don't want to change their behavior. We need to talk about those people and to those people as well. Doesn't mean I encourage everyone who has never done crystal meth to call their dealer tonight and try it. That is not what I said. Actually, at the opposite, like the amount of time in my life that I've heard people when they're hurting or they're like kind of like at a place where they're tired of that drug in their life, saying like, God, I wish I had never picked it up to start with. And can those two things live together? Yeah, I think that's what we're going to try to do in our podcast.
I think so. I'm disappointed we're not promoting crystal meth use here, because I told my dealers I was going to promote them on the podcast. I guess that's off, right? So
yeah,
no, I think I agree with you, Vincent. Like, I mean, as somebody who uses crystal meth and at various points in my life, I've had a problematic relationship with it. I mean, for myself, I would say if I could go back and do it all again, it's hard for me to say no, I wouldn't do it. I certainly would have maybe counseled myself differently to think about things a little bit more. But I would never say I would promote it. I would say that, you know, if you know yourself, and people don't often know themselves very deeply in this way, but like if you know yourself to be a person with an addictive personality, or you know you've had trauma in your past, or you know that you're struggling with emotions that you can't deal with, I would say maybe think hard about using crystal meth before you try it. It's not something I would encourage people to use. It's a very hard drug to do harm reduction with, but it's possible to do it. And some people have recreational habits with it. And that's not me, but there are some people. But I would never promote it. Yeah. I certainly want people to have a realistic understanding that it is a drug that is hard on the body. It is hard on the brain, hard on the heart. It's hard on a lot of levels. And because there's the stigma attached with it too, I would never encourage people to go and use something that's going to get them judged and scorned by friends and family alike. But I also respect the fact that people do it. We don't have to promote it. People do it. People have been using drugs for a long time without anybody promoting it.
Yeah.
And if you don't accept that fact, well, then you're not accepting the world as it is. And if we're not providing any support to those people who are using drugs, like that's just, in my opinion, it's kind of a criminal act. It's like if you're saying the only option is abstinence, and if I can't get there, then I'm SOL, right? I'm out of luck. That's not right. Which is why I think the message of abstinence and harm reduction is really important to have, because people should have options and choices. Everyone's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. I would encourage people when it comes to drugs to not accept drugs from people without knowing what it is, without maybe Googling it before, without knowing the full name. And in the gay community, that's something that maybe some people who are straight don't necessarily understand. But like, I often say to people when they ask me if I've ever done crystal meth, and I'm like, I've never done it, but only because when I was at the time of my life where I was doing drugs more, I was in Montreal. I think it took a little while longer for that drug to come into like the mainstream Montreal. And then it was just like never offered to me. But I said yes to drugs because my friends or my colleagues, I was a bartender, were like, Vincent, you should do that tonight. And I was like, yeah, absolutely, without asking what it was much. And I, looking back, I'm like, maybe that's a behavior that I could have avoided.
So trusting you were. Girl, you're not alone on that. I've done that a few thousand times in my life. Like, oh, there's this powder here. Okay, fine, sure, cool. You know, which, you know, I mean, some of us are risk takers. Some of us don't have a good sense of boundaries. Some of us just want to make friends and you know, that's the way to do it. But I would never tell people to accept drugs from a stranger without knowing what it is first. There's so many resources that you can go to. Some of them are better than others, but you can go to and like do some research. My friend Nick Boyce, who you know as well, who Shout out to Nick, head of the Ontario Harm Reduction Network. He always talks about the fact that he researches his drugs before he ever tries them. He like reads up on them. He like does book reports on them. I don't know. He's very, very knowledgeable. But he does that education piece. And it's like you owe it to yourself to know what you're taking and to also not take it from a stranger, because that's when bad stuff happens. I mean, you take it from a stranger and you don't know what you're putting in your body. And I've seen a lot of stuff where people take drugs from strangers and that's how they overdose or they get, you know, things like sexual assault happen. It's not good. So you got to stand up for yourself there.
Yeah, it's more rare, but I've heard people in the past knowing that crystal meth is bad, but they were like, oh, but I did not do crystal meth. I did tea. And I'm like, oh, but that's the street name for it.
Yeah.
Which for me is so like obvious, but if you're a newcomer, if you don't know much about the gay community and you've just heard, like, I remember watching way too many seasons of Grey's Anatomy and how many times they vilify crystal meth for absolutely no reason on that show and on so many shows that I love. A show that I really love and I discovered in the pandemic was Superstore. It's so good and it's so funny, but like that show, at least twice every season, they use crystal meth as like the summums of bad drugs. They just use it to make a joke like all the time, and it's super stigmatizing. So even in shows that I love, not that I loved Grey's Anatomy.
The secret's out. You're a Grey's Anatomy stan. Oh, I know. God.
So even in those shows, it's been used. So people know crystal meth is bad, but like for some people, they've never realized that crystal meth has street names that just are different.
They're different. Nobody's coming up and offering you, would you like some crystal methamphetamine? No. Tina, ice, crank, jib, tea. You're right about the newcomer thing, as well as if you're drug naive, period. Like, you don't know what you're trying. People pass it off as cocaine sometimes. You don't know. And it's a dangerous thing, right? So education is key. And like, kind of knowing the street names is helpful.
I feel like we've been talking for a while and we've yet to really say what is crystal meth and what is PNP, which is a word I think we're going to use a lot in this podcast. But for the people who don't know and are still listening without us explaining what it is for the first 20 minutes, how about you explain what is crystal meth?
Crystal meth. What is crystal meth? Okay, so crystal meth, if you're going to ask me for the ingredients, you're kind of like, you're looking at the wrong guy. I know a few things that go into it, but it's basically, it's a crystalline sort of substance. It's you get it in shards that look like broken glass almost, right? It can be transparent to translucent, so clear to sort of foggy looking. And it's consumed a number of ways. It's a stimulant drug, first and foremost. So if people don't know what a stimulant drug is, it makes you go up, right? It's like an upper.
What else is a stimulant drug, Jordan?
Well, things like coffee, cocaine, nicotine, Adderall, I think. A lot of the Ritalin. Ritalin is a stimulant drug. So,
yeah.
In fact, I'll tell you people about that part of crystal meth in a moment, because it's got a connection to ADHD. But so it's you know, consumed a number of ways, but it's a stimulant. People who take it want to feel up and elevated. You know, your attention is focused. You get horny. If you're a gay man, you get horny on it. And I know some people who use crystal meth for other reasons, and there are other reasons to use crystal meth. But for the sexual purposes, you get horny. You're feeling really energized and alive and awake and alert and confident. But it's consumed a number of ways. You smoke it in a bowl pipe. So a little bit different than smoking. Oh, crack is another stimulant drug. There we go. I just remembered.
Because the pipe
the
for
pipe.
Crack and crystal meth is very similar. I don't think they're exactly the same.
They're similar in that they're a long glass stem, but at the end of a crystal meth pipe, there's actually a bowl, sort of like you'd see on a bong for pot almost, but not quite. And you put the shard of crystal in there and you smoke it. I'm telling people how to do crystal meth on your podcast. I'm going to stop myself right there. And if you want to find out more, ask somebody else. Don't ask me. But you smoke it, you inject it, which is called slamming, which is a more intense experience, or you can snort it, or you can put it up your butt, called booty bumping. So it's a little bit about crystal meth, like the how it's done and what it is.
A lot of people who encounter crystal meth for the first time, because even if we don't want to, and I'm one person who's trying to not do that as much as possible, but to put like a hierarchy of drug of like some drugs are good and acceptable, like nicotine and coffee. and sugar, and some drugs are the devil, namely opioids and crystal meth and crack. People have that hierarchy, and for a lot of people who encounter crystal meth for the first time, the fact that it's smoked, a lot of people start with smoking, it feels less intrusive or quote unquote dangerous than some other drugs that you would like snort or because smoking is so much associated with weed, which is a very well tolerated drug. So I've heard from a lot of people that because it was smoke, it didn't feel as intrusive as some other drugs. Like, oh, I would never like had taken a pill or taken like a powder, but like smoking felt like something that was easier.
It's really interesting you say that because I'm like the exact opposite. I didn't smoke it when I first encountered it because I thought smoking was a lot like crack, right? Because it was like a shard. I thought it was like a crack rock. I don't want to smoke crack because I have the stigma around crack. But I can see why that would make sense to people. It does seem a lot like smoking weed and very innocuous, right? You're just breathing a little smoke in and exhaling it, having a good time. Whereas snorting it does feel like cocaine, which is in people's hierarchy of drugs, which I also don't agree with.
But we have it. Like, even if we don't agree, like we can... I'm pretty sure we could like write down our hierarchy of drugs and it would be pretty much exactly the same.
Right. I think so too. I think, except for me, I think weed is at the top of my list. It's like, oh, weed is a bad drug because it's not good with me. So,
right.
But you know, I have to be countercultural there. But can I say one thing on crystal meth though that I think is maybe important to note is that crystal meth, because it's a man-made stimulant, it is like, not infinitely, but it's like a number of factors more intense than say the nearest natural occurring stimulant, which is cocaine. It is a much more intense high than you're going to experience from any other stimulant drug, which is, I think, why people are sort of scared of it so much, is because it has a bigger effect on the brain and it lasts longer. Mm-hmm. It's like not like a few 15 minutes and then you're back in the bathroom again. It's like we're talking 4, 6, 8 hours later, you're doing good. You know, it's a very powerful stimulant, which is why I think people need to be smart about it and think about it.
Being a man-made product, I think, is a really important thing. It's one of the first things that I teach to people about crystal meth and how it has like different effects and how it's more like quote unquote like chemical than some other drugs. And you said you're not an expert on what goes in it, and obviously neither am I, but like it's a lot of stuff you don't necessarily would think that you want to put in your body, like stuff to clean the brakes of a car, stuff that is like in batteries, cleaning products. Like,
yeah, there's a difference between Javex bleach and like a plant that grows in a forest. And I don't want to put the Javex bleach necessarily into my body, but yeah, you're right about that. And Sudafed, I think cough medication that you can no longer buy over the counter goes into it and a few other things, but you're right. It's not nice stuff that goes into crystal meth.
And mostly what it does, that's really important to know about crystal meth. Like the first and foremost thing that it does is it just like increases your levels of dopamine. Dopamine is the feel good hormone that you have when you eat or when you have sex or when you do other drugs. And then it just like shoots like a bunch of dopamine. There are people who are much better than me at explaining that process, but really it just like sends a bunch of dopamine into your brain. And then there are a few things that are super interesting with dopamine. The first one is that dopamine reacts to novelty. And so the same piece of cake that I would have for 30 days, after 30 days would not give me the same amount of dopamine. And so because using crystal meth, you sort of like creates fake dopamines for a lot of people using, they have that craving for novelty a lot all of the time, just because this is how this hormone works.
That's really interesting that you bring that up, because I mean, I've seen that play out a lot of the time in the PMP scene, which we'll talk about PMP in a moment, which is guys get very easily distracted and they're like looking for the next flashy new thing, the next guy, the next, you know, the next sexual act that tops the last one. There's a lot of pursuit of novelty and new when you're in that particular mindset. And guys complain about it actively when it's other guys, but it's just one of those things that the drug has an effect on.
Knowing how dopamine works in the brain is just like very important if you're going to be someone who uses crystal meth or wants to understand crystal meth. And that need for novelty is something that scares a lot of users, because they're like, is that me? Like, am I that person? Why am I so different when I'm high and when I'm sober? And that's because often that dopamine is just like, I want new things. I'm craving for new experience all the time. And that's not a defect of who they are as a human. It's just literally they're putting fake dopamine in their brain, and the dopamine that they put in their brain is just like, I want this. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's not like a morality thing. Very rarely when people are high on drugs should we be making moral judgments about their behavior, because their behavior is being really motivated by, you're motivated by different things when you're high on drugs. You know, you don't have access to your critical thinking skills the same way, or the sort of like second thought that you usually would have. It's one of those states of mind that you have to be really accepting of people where they're at with that kind of stuff going on. The other thing with dopamine too, though, is like, what's the effect of all that up with dopamine is when you stop using is obviously the crash. Yeah. I know we were probably going to get to that, but I just felt like I'd hedge off at the pass. And
tell us more about the crash, Jordan.
Well, it's a delightful state of affairs. So when you're going that far up and you're flooding your brain with that much dopamine, the brain has to rebound, right? It can't reproduce all that dopamine all at once. It takes some time. So you're depleting your levels, right? After you come down from crystal meth, which takes some time. I think for somebody who's a novice user, I would say you're probably going to experience a crash. And you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. I'd say about 2 to 3 days, you're looking at kind of a low, low, low mood. You know, you might sleep a lot more for the first day or the second day, but you're going to experience a depressed mood. And so sometimes that can be a really dark place for people. If you use more or more frequently or larger amounts, that crash can be extended by quite some time.
Well, generally speaking, with each drug, the longer you're high, the longer your crash. That just like makes sense. And because we've named earlier, crystal meth is a drug that like you get high for a really long time with a fairly small amount, then it makes sense. People using crystal meth, it's not rare that they are high for like 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. So then their crash is going to be 2 days, 3 days, 4 days long.
Right. And so that's a really great point. And we missed, I think, the sleep deprivation thing. There's a few things that get suppressed when you use crystal meth. And one is the urge to eat, sleep, and mostly hydrate. So people don't hydrate properly when they're high on crystal meth. Mm-hmm. And so those are things to be mindful of. If you're somebody who's using crystal meth, you can build a routine around that and force yourself to do those things that help make the crash a little bit more manageable. But if you're going for 3 or 4 days straight with no break, that crash is going to be rough and it's going to be low. And, you know, people can get quite depressed and hopeless about things. I think it's one of those things to be aware of if you're somebody who's an active user, to be very mindful of the fact you shouldn't be making decisions in that low period because your brain is low on dopamine. You're not making good decisions. You're making depressed decisions from a really depressed state. And just, you know, catch up on your sleep and eat and rest. And yeah. Try to bounce back. But yeah, it's a rough spot.
It's also rough because, and again, there are people like neuroscientists and like psychiatrists that are so much better than me at describing this. But generally speaking, often because people put that man-made dopamine in their brain, for most people, when they stop using, their brain is sort of like incapable of creating its own dopamine for a while. That's not even the crash. That can last for quite a long time. That's really interesting to know. You're trying to reduce or quit or do harm reduction with the drug that prevents you when you're not high to experience any type of pleasure and satisfaction in life. The only thing that then brings you pleasure and satisfaction is the use of that drug. And so it's completely understandable. I think, again, I've worked with a lot of people who have stopped. And one of the thing that everybody's sort of like agreeing with is that if you want to be successful at quitting crystal meth, you kind of have to accept that your life is going to be boring for an extended period of time. Because not only that, but also even people who are doing really well and have stopped, at some point their brain starts to create dopamine just by its own. And then automatically that's a trigger to be like, oh yeah, dopamine, I love that. Oh, you know what could give me more dopamine? Crystal meth. So like there's a step in the recovery of crystal meth that becomes a really intense trigger to use crystal meth. Like when you're successful, when most people are successful at stopping crystal meth, their brain starts healing and starts creating dopamine, which is automatically a trigger to start using again. What a freaking catch 22.
It's a delightful one. And I've been there actually, because I'd stopped for 4 years. I don't know if I've ever told you that before, but I stopped for four years at one point. Yeah, I've told you that. And I remember that being like when I felt good or I felt like when I felt good or I felt horny, it was a really bad spot for me when I was in recovery because I was like, you know, chomping at the bit. And I feel you on that. So there's different considerations, I guess, where you're at. If you're using, you've got different considerations. You don't want to like necessarily fall into that trap of always using to like get back to a place of enjoyment with life. You have got to ride out that sort of crash for a bit. But if you're trying to stop, the dopamine is like going to be a trigger. Be aware of that. I mean, I think that the thing that I think is the hardest struggle if you're actually in use of crystal meth is that if you want to keep it manageable, you've got to take breaks between it. You know, you got to give it yourself a break. And it's hard to do that, right? Especially if you've got a job or you've got a life and you want to go out and be with people. Like crashing for 3 days is not exactly line up with people's lives these days. You can't take 3 days off work just to come off of crystal meth. So taking breaks or really spacing things out or having it be on special occasions is a good strategy for a lot of folks to manage use. Those are some things that people need to consider if they're going to be trying to harm reduce with crystal meth.
I think similar to that, one thing that I say a lot is that people who want to do the harm reduction, they need to continue to have sex while sober. So they have sex sometimes when they're high, but they also have to have and enjoy and appreciate sober sex like in between, which I think is harder to do for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a challenging one. We're talking about sex in one of these episodes, aren't we? So I don't want to blow our...
We're not. Let's talk about sex now. So it has an impact. You said it. So fun fact, fun trivia. I don't know how much this is true anymore, but like I read that once on the internet. I think crystal meth, it was one of the drugs that's the most used on the planet. Because of what you said about ADHD and concentration, it helps people focus. So not everybody uses it for sex, but... in the gay, bi, men, queer world, we use it for sex.
Oh, how we use it for sex.
Tell us more about that.
Well, when a man and another man really love each other, and then they meet three other guys that they kind of like. So I make a light of it, but like the fusion of crystal meth and sex is pretty like, it's intense. I'm not going to promote it or glorify it, but I'm just going to say, for those that enjoy it, it's a really pleasurable experience, right? Like your senses are heightened, you're more intense and focused. That novelty thing is kind of works in your advantage sometimes because you want to try new things. And we all have like, I think every gay man that I've ever met has some sort of hang up sexually in terms of like being able to let go or feel comfortable in their sexuality or exploring new things, right? We all have like fears about, oh, I want to do this with my partner, but I'm afraid they won't like it. Or I want to have a three-way and I've never done that before. Well, the crystal meth is a lubricant for that, right? Mm-hmm. It makes it easier to like let go. People's inhibitions are down. You can explore new things sexually and you can do it for a long period of time.
Yeah, because you have more energy.
Yep. 1 hour of sex is fun. 6 hours of sex is really like mind-blowing. Right? Like that's kind of a thing. Mind you, it's also very chafing and very exhausting.
Yeah, it just sounds tiring and painful to me. But
I mean, it can be. It can be. I'm not going to vilify it because I'm not, even though I admit that sometimes crystal meth has been a problem for me, I've also gained insight into my own sexuality and what pleases me in that regard. And it's been positive in that regard. Pleasure is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all.
And reducing stigma around gay sex is not a bad thing.
No, there shouldn't be a stigma around gay sex, but there is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about you, but from my personal experience, I'll share. Like, I still at times feel ashamed of the way that gay men have sex. I feel like it's dirty and bad. And that comes from a place that isn't authentically me. That comes from like the world around me and growing up, never seeing gay sex like framed as a good thing. Growing up in the 80s, like gay sex meant death.
Yeah.
Like that's the earliest memories I have of gay sex. So, you know, you kind of get fucked up by that.
I remember a younger version of me thinking there was like good gay sex and bad gay sex. Like the good gay sex that sort of like looked more like the heteronormative gay sex, well, heterosex, and there was bad gay sex. There were good gays and bad gays. I actually have a lot of shame remembering some parts of me when I was younger thinking that way.
Yeah, like the sex piece is like huge though, because so many people bring shame to that and guilt. And if you can find a way around that, crystal is a very convenient way around it. It's a quick way around it. The other way around it, which is doing work on ourselves and like looking at the shame, it takes effort and time and support. And you and I both know there's not a ton of support out there for gay men, period, around these kinds of things. And so...
Well, the thing with crystal is that you don't heal it, you sort of like hide it very well.
Yeah, you get to it. It's not quite a healing. It's like you circumvent the hard work and you get to the effect, but then it can cause for some people other problem. But you're right, it isn't the actual healing. At least in my experience, it hasn't been either. Like I've used it and I know that I have not healed from my issues. I know that I have to look at them more deeply. So plus all the other stuff that comes after having used. So.
So we've talked about crystal meth, a little bit about the stereotypes, what it does, how it affects sexuality. I think one of the last things we have not talked when we're doing a MET 101 is like, how does it impact people's life?
Wow. Obviously, I think you and I can both agree it impacts people's lives very differently depending on the person. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll make the distinction here. If we're talking about problematic use, which I want to say is like use that where people feel they are not in control of their using, or they're sort of at the mercy of the drug or what have you, dependent, there's some effects that it has on people that are somewhat similar. People sometimes lose, for me at least, I'll speak for myself because that's the best place to speak from. I lost touch with a lot of friends and who are not using. I became isolated and sort of enclosed in a community of other using people or other guys who used because I felt safe there. And I felt very judged in that other community. But it was bad because it cut me off from a lot of social support and a lot of people who've known me for a long time. It caused problems with my family. I spent a long time during my problematic use being deceitful about my substance use because of the shame and stigma. And that creation of all those lies around my substance use made things problematic for me as well. Problems with work, problems with medication adherence for my HIV, there's health complications too. I wouldn't generalize these happen to everybody. For some people they happen, some people they don't. But if you're in a problematic place of use, I think you're going to experience some of those ill social effects. People lose jobs, people lose homes when crystal meth becomes a priority in their life or partying becomes a priority. And that's some of the more negative outcomes. Mm-hmm. The impacts that were can I talk about the positive impacts for a moment?
Because there are positive. If it was just bad, I keep saying that, and then people accuse me of promoting crystal meth. But if crystal meth only had negative impact and negative things, nobody would be using it.
Right. Here's a drug that will ruin your life. Try it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe there's this very small percentage of the population that would do some things that are like 100% just purely self-destructive. But most people are not like that. So it has positive impacts on people's life.
Yeah, you're quite right about that. And actually, even in the midst of problematic use, and this is a thing that I find people don't quite cotton on to, is that even if I've got lots of problems going on, if the payoff from using crystal meth is that good for me and it's giving me something that I feel I need that much, I'm going to keep using, even though I've got all of these other consequences happening in my life. And like, that's kind of the story of my 20s and my 30s.
Or if I have those things that are positive and I cannot fathom how to replace them in my life, you cannot just say like, oh, suddenly we're going to remove this from your life and not bring you anything new. Mm-hmm. If it brings some positive, you need other strategies, other things have the similar positive effect. Otherwise, we're just like, let's remove a huge part of your life and your daily, weekly life and hope for the best.
Take away your coping strategy. Enjoy life unfiltered without crystal meth. You're going to not succeed at that. And you're quite right. You know, the things it gave me in terms of the positives, you know, the sex piece was big for me because I felt very ashamed of my body. I felt very shy and I felt very like I couldn't access my sexuality comfortably. So it was a lubricant for that. It got me to try new things, to explore new identities. People would call it a false confidence, but I do know that there's some authentic piece where I feel like now more empowered sexually in a way. People are going to think I'm crazy, but I learned how to set boundaries with guys and I learned how to assert myself and obtain consent because of using crystal meth. Because so many times I was in situations where people did not want to do that. I had to learn how to do that. So that's a weird positive for me. But pay us for that, the confidence, I guess, the community. People will tell you left, right, and center that the guys you party with aren't your friends, but it gave me a sense of community and brotherhood and connection to other gay men that I could not get.
We're going to talk about that community piece in the second episode a lot. Yeah.
So I won't blow my wad there either. So it's a lot of me like giving you sneak previews, but the community piece was important. And, you know, there was a lifestyle that goes around with that that was also kind of appealing. And those are things that were really important to me, a sense of gay identity. And I read this in a paper last year. They were talking about why it's so hard for gay men to leave the scene. And it's because their gay identity becomes bound up in the party scene, because we haven't defined party and play yet either. But it becomes defined by who they are in that scene. And so asking them to step out of it means a loss of gay identity for them. And they don't know who they are as gay men. I connected with that so much. I was like, oh, that's kind of how I feel every time I've tried to step back. I feel like, who am I as a gay man if I'm not this person?
Yeah, if I don't have gay sex, am I a gay man?
Exactly. Like if I'm this abstinent, like sexually abstinent person who's like just focused on, you know, eating healthily and like, you know, going for jogs and resting. That's not. But so much of gay culture is about sex. Like, regardless of crystal meth, we got to say it. Like, it's about sex. It's about hookups. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that more later.
Yeah. So what is PNP?
I'm glad you asked.
Because we're going to use that word a lot. We've had without explaining what it is.
Our viewers are going to hate us. They're like, they define things at the end of the show. We don't know what they're talking about. PNP stands for Party and Play, which is the North American descriptor for the scene where guys get together and they use sex and drugs together. It's very specific drugs and sex. It's not like I'm smoking weed necessarily. You can't smoke weed at Party and Play, but it's fixated really on the stimulant drugs like methamphetamine or meth, crystal meth, Tina, GHB or G, water, Gina. All those acronyms. Those are the two big drugs. And you've got a few other peripheral drugs like K, which is ketamine, which is a dissociative drug. You've got poppers, Viagra, sometimes crack and cocaine. Yeah, things like that. Mm. But they're really enhancers of sex and sexuality. So guys use them in those contexts. I've heard it said that guys like Party and Play are always into group sex. And I think that's a bit of a researcher's like thing that they've come up with. It's like, I know a lot of guys who just like one-on-one or just on their phone, you know. It's like Party and Play can be two people in a room smoking crystal meth. It can be 10 guys at an orgy smoking crystal meth.
There's actually like a ton of people using crystal meth who end up not having sex anymore because their sort of like meth infused like obsession becomes around porn and online sex. So
yep. And that's a big thing in the COVID. I know a lot of guys, anecdotally speaking, talked about increasing their use or using online in Zoom rooms because they couldn't get together. So it's any number of permutations of that, but it's gay guys or queer guys, bi guys, they can be cis or trans, it doesn't matter. You know, in that space, having some sort of sexual encounter or feeling with the use of drugs to enhance it. So it's called chemsex in the UK, which I think is a sexier term personally, but we don't adopt that in North America. And people don't listen to me when I say we should call it chemsex. But
I don't like chemsex, so I'm going to fight you. This is a cat fight. We promise we would not have.
I'm out of the studio. I quit.
I've never liked the term chemsex. It just doesn't ring properly in my ear. And in, like, I don't like it.
Okay. I'll use Party and Play to humor you.
We can use, maybe I'll get more used to it by the end of this podcast.
Now that I know it bothers you, just wait.
There's a few of the effects that I think are interesting to know that I'm going to just like drop here, like again, towards the end of the podcast. One thing that I find really interesting to know about crystal meth is that for most people, it enhanced the vision. That's why porn is so important. And it reduces the capacity to hear. So retain information that's like said is really challenging. So people are way more, and that's why like dating apps and porn take such like an important place versus like a conversation. Especially like a conversation, spoken conversation over the phone with someone who's high is almost like impossible because the auditive retention is fairly bad. So it does affect that. It's a small thing, but it's kind of important to know.
It is an important point because if you're communicating with a loved one who uses crystal meth, you're going to get frustrated if they're not listening to you. But instead of like, you know, demonizing them for that, understanding where they're at and how they communicate, super important, right? Mm-hmm. If you want them to remember something, maybe write it out for them, you know?
Yeah, we find that texting is a good alternative to talking because it's just easier for people who are high to focus on things that are visual versus things that are like auditive. Mm-hmm. Another thing that it does is that it tends to shut down. Again, I'm doing broad generalization. It's every user is different, but generally speaking, it tends to shut down the part of the brain that's in charge of self-preservation. So things that people would not necessarily do because they kind of understand that it's dangerous. Then it's shut down. And alcohol does that to a certain point. I think most people who hear this knows that like, oh yeah, I done some really stupid things when I was drunk because I did not, like I drove, I crossed the street without looking. Like that self-preservation voice is not there, but crystal meth does that even more, which is quite nice for people who are preoccupied by a million things like rent is late, I've lost my job, I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight. It's a bit extreme right now, my examples, mm-hmm. But then smoking sort of like shuts those voice up for quite a while, which again, I think is a really interesting thing to know. And again, there are some nuances, obviously. And then another thing that it does to a lot of people is that even though it creates a big community for so many people, it prevents like that sense of empathy. So some of the nicest, sweetest people that I know when they're sober, when they're high, they just have no care for others. They just have very little empathy, including their parents, their friends. their partner, their sex partners, that sense of empathy is just completely out of the door, which can be really frustrating if you are someone who's not using crystal meth trying to support someone who uses meth, because once they're high, they can be mean, they can be rude, and sometimes you will need to set boundaries with those people. I think boundaries is the most important thing to do.
Boundaries are important for whether you're using or not using or you're supporting somebody. Boundaries are always super important. And being in the scene as long as I have been, I know that thankfully I did some work on boundaries, and I still do work on boundaries with my therapist, because it keeps me safe and sane in a place where people are often boundaryless. The empathy thing I agree with, but I will say I've seen people also do some of the most loving and kind things for each other in the scene, because we also know that there's a whole culture that doesn't support us or stack against us. So there is some, there's support and care in the scene, but I do acknowledge a lot of nasty behavior and people not being very empathetic or having a hard time thinking of other people in the moment.
Right.
Right. And it does play out in lots of like big and small ways.
I agree with you that there's a lot of love and support in the scene, because I think it's important to remember that in the scene, not everybody is high 24/7 all the time at the same level.
Yeah.
Right. Like somebody who uses crystal meth is not constantly at the peak of their high.
No, they're not. We're not always high 24/7. Thank God. Thank God. But yeah, you're quite right about that.
A lot too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, there's people can learn sometimes, I think, to like, if you don't have the empathy, but you can learn how to just be a decent mannered, well-mannered human being. Good manners count for something. You're quite right. It's difficult to access that care. And that's why sometimes I think the friendships that are in the scene sometimes are very fleeting. I've seen a lot of friendships that are really intense and then they break apart because, you know, somebody stole drugs from somebody or somebody, you know, slept with somebody's boyfriend. And there's a lot of that that happens. But I think everybody in the scene is going to yell at me now because I'm betraying all of our secrets. But I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
So we've dumped a lot of information in this first episode. I kind of knew that this is what we were going to do. I think anybody who has listened to this episode who already knows about crystal meth is probably like pretty bored right now, because it was a lot of like 101. And maybe people who don't know anything about crystal meth, I don't know, probably like on the other side of that, like very overwhelmed because we just dumped a lot of information. So thank you for your patience in listening, everyone. We needed to start this way. It was the only way to start, to set the table. But we have 5 more episodes. And I've not decided yet if I'm going to release all of those at the same time, so you can actually binge watch this mini series, binge listen this mini series like all back to back, or if I'm going to like release once a week or every 2 days. But it's going to be quite quick. So what's coming in the next few episodes? Our next episode is going to be a 2-parters that Jordan, you're going to be taking the lead on. We're going to talk about like, why do people use and why does it become a problem for certain people and not for others? The 3rd episode, we're going to actually talk about the 12-step model, which is a model that I work with a lot for people in recovery, and that a lot of people in recovery have a very like love-hate relationship with. After that, in episode 4, we're going to talk about harm reduction versus abstinence. And the last episode of this series is going to be around the silence around PNP and how knowing that people use in our community, then what we can do to break the stigma and come together better. So thank you for going through episode 1. Thank you, Jordan, for being here.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun. I enjoyed myself. And thank you for listening to my voice, listeners.
These conversations we've had today, I've had about 3 million times in my life. So I'm much more interested for the conversations that are to come in the next few episodes.
Agreed. Better things ahead. Stay tuned.
So go listen to the next episode. And in the meantime, you can leave us a review or a comment, subscribe to the podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at mentalhealthmuch. Jordan, you also have a drug positive Instagram handle.
I do. It's Blood and Gore, and Gore is G-O-R-R on Instagram. I post a lot of content there.
We'll put a link in the description to both of our Instagram. And until the next time, please keep talking about mental health as much as you can and stay safe.